Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Don't let me get away from doing some of the stuff that I wanted to do today, including the audio of Greg Popovich. You know, the U.S. basketball team, Sue, I don't know if you know this. You know, Jane's been talking about how we got some St. Louis folks on this Olympic basketball team. They've lost two games. Lost two exhibition games leading up to the Olympics, to Nigeria and to Australia.
Oh, dear.
That's
Team Australia, I can kind of understand.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. They're pretty good with basketball.
The one thing I would say, you know, I was trying to think through this, and Popovich got very defensive with the international media, but you have a bunch of superstars in the NBA which are put together on a team where they haven't played with one another.
Well, so that's true, right?
If you hear through the comments, and I'll play some a little later, you could probably hear Popovich say, look, yeah, we're not that very good right now, but the goal here is to get ready for the Olympics. Would it surprise me if they don't win the gold medal? Yes, it would.
Yeah,
but they better play a little better than they are right now. So we have that. Also, a little bit later this hour, David Stokes will be with us. The governor of Missouri, Governor Parsons, signed something called the Wayfair Bill, and we're going to talk about that. It's chock full of goodies for folks and municipal leaders around the state, not in a good way necessarily. We'll talk about that with David coming up a little later this hour. We also have an audio cut of the day. I can't remember where I saw this the first time today. But it started with a Twitter string, and then I think somebody kind of turned it into an article, and we've invited Wilfred Riley on the program this afternoon. He's a college professor in Kentucky, put together a thread that has gone viral that I think makes a lot of great points this afternoon. Wilfred, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Doing pretty well. Glad to be on the show.
You are down at what university in Kentucky?
I teach at Kentucky State in Frankfort, the capital.
Awesome. All right. Well, again, this kind of took on a life of its own, didn't it? You just put this stuff on Twitter and you said, look, an interesting phenomenon today is that there exists a whole genre of plain truths, which everyone across all races, et cetera, would agree to in a barbershop, on a basketball court, on a golf course, but which almost cannot be mentioned in quote unquote polite discourse, right? So that's how it started.
Yeah, just to clarify, I mean, at a state university, you're expected to write. So I'm also the author of the books Hate Crime, Hoax, and Taboo, and I've done a fair amount of media. So I wasn't just entirely like an innocent young academic. I have about 40,000 followers on Twitter.
Okay, well, that kind of, at least in the effort of honesty, that kind of puts it together. It wasn't accidental that this took off. You were hoping that it did, and it did.
Well, you always wonder, actually, as any kind of public official, whether you want people to see all your personal thoughts. But yeah, I mean, I think Ben Shapiro, who I've, you know, talked to socially a few times, shared it. A couple of people on the left did as well, black preachers and the African-American preachers and so on. And so, yeah, I was surprised to see how viral it went. But the whole point of the thread was just I'd gotten done playing basketball with my friends in Irvine, Kentucky. And it was a diverse group, blacks, whites, Asians. There was a female member of the group. And we were talking about all these things that can almost get you fired, a la James Damore, but that everybody knows. And so just goofing around, I wrote down a couple of these, like, dads matter in your life if you're a young woman. And people kept suggesting them. We kept discussing things in the thread. I mean, one was, you know, you don't want them shot, but the majority of people that are killed by the police are violent, repeat felons, and so on down the line. Many public officials are stupid. When you listen to them being interviewed, you are not just missing some kind of brilliance that the local mayor has that you don't see. So yeah, it went on.
No, that one, I can vouch for that one, having been in the media for 5 decades now. Yeah, absolutely. They're not that smart. Why do you think they're going into politics? There's nothing else they can do. Sometimes I think that way. But yeah, they were all things that we would probably get together on in normal circumstances, maybe before George Floyd, maybe before Mike Brown, and say, you know what, we can agree on these things. But that we've gotten way far away from there, haven't we?
Yeah, and I think that this is actually an important phenomenon in that we've seen, and this gets, but I mean, from the AOCs to the MTGs, which is almost a callback comedy style to my comment about public officials and their brilliance just now. But I mean, we see a lot of fairly extreme voices dominating media now that media is mostly about narrowcasting. In fact, a big urban radio may be an exception to this, but the majority of people haven't gone crazy. So I think when you see these Facebook and Twitter groups like Politically Homeless, a lot of people feel like they're listening to just this constant idiotic ranting, and it has nothing to do with their day-to-day life. Most people don't have any problem with their black or white or Republican or Democratic or whatever neighbors, except maybe every 4 years during an election or something. So again, these sort of points, like, you know, go mentor young people. I mean, they're the most banal kind of thing, but that's why they are so controversial. But why they were so well-received, I think.
But we also, we're in this position right now, where, and I think about these topics a lot, and it makes me sad from the standpoint, look, I'm a person because of who I am in the media. I've lost some people as friends because apparently even though they were friends with me for a long time and knew me pretty well and in some circumstances talked to me on a regular basis, I somehow managed to hide from them my KKK membership because apparently now I'm too racist. So it's sad because I have people, and I don't know how many people get isolated or alienated along these ways. You know, I do something that's rather unique, blabbing here on the radio. But it really bums me out that you can't. There's a lot of people, and I think about this. I see friends on Facebook, mainly African-American friends and people like that. And I think, can I sit down and have a conversation with them, or are they going to be unwilling to hear my perspective because I'm a conservative radio host? Now, that's unique to my situation, but I think everybody struggles with that in a different way.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think that's a reasonable analysis. And I also think that social media, coming from kind of the academic professor role, has a lot of blame to share or to face for that. I mean, I can pretty much guarantee that if you went out with a black buddy to dinner at one of the great barbecue or Mexican or whatever places I've seen in St. Louis when I was there, you guys could talk about this stuff. What you have is these sort of amplifiers where you might say something conservative on their page and 50 people would like it, and then there's the sense of being compelled to respond. You know, are you friends with that guy? And this is when you very often see these ugly arguments. I mean, whenever possible, I think it's a good idea to call your friends, certainly your relatives, and, you know, stay in touch in person. But, yeah, we've entered a hypersensitive era, and the fact that if someone wins an argument with you, 800 people can like that, I mean, that certainly hasn't helped that out.
You know, Wilford Riley's with us, a professor from Kentucky. One of your points on this string was, and I want to address this and kind of wind it back to what we were just talking about. Number 11 is almost no one is actually oppressed in 2021 America. While Radical Brothers and the Edge Right scream at each other about who the real ultimate victim is, immigrants from places like Vietnam are kicking everyone's ass. And I've been to third world countries. I've seen actual oppression. But, you know, one of the things that happened to me with the friendships that I've mentioned, and hopefully this is not disintegrated, but my college roommate was black from Mizzou 40 years ago, and we've been friends for decades. Now, we are very aware that we have different opinions on politics, but there was something, and I rarely do this. I have a show page that I haven't paid much attention to, but on my personal page on Facebook, I did something a couple years ago related to Colin Kaepernick, and I pretty much called him a POS because that's how I feel about him. Now, my position on Colin Kaepernick is rather nuanced, and when I sat down to dinner with my friend, this was one of the topics that came up because when I put that on Facebook, it blew up and everyone's commenting, and obviously the nuance cannot be understood from just a simple Facebook post. But my position on that was, you got a guy like Colin Kaepernick who comes out in the aftermath of taking a knee, and he's wearing a T-shirt that pays homage to one of the most brutal dictatorships on the planet and one of the biggest oppressors on the planet, certainly in the last 100 years. And guys like him and apparently Bernie Sanders think that, you know, it's not a big deal that even the common folk today on this very date in Cuba can't get a hamburger unless you're an elite. You can't even own a cow. Now, that's oppression.
Yeah, I think. I mean, there are a couple of different things there. I mean, obviously, I'm on at least the center-right politically. So, yeah, communism's never worked. You can't point me to a successful communist state. China doesn't count. That's almost a truism in political science, by the way, left and right aside. But, I mean, beyond that, you're right. Number 11 in the thread of tweets just said nobody, you know, conservative, white, black guy, maybe a few American Indian exceptions, but nobody is oppressed. We talk and talk here about how it might be 5% harder to do something as an African-American guy, which I am myself. But the reality is that the wealthiest groups in the USA aren't white or black. I mean, I believe number one is Jewish Americans, number two is Indian Americans. I suppose many Jews are Caucasian. But number three is Taiwanese American. Number four is Filipino American. Nigerians are in the top 20. Nigerians, obviously, are black. South Africans, number eight. That's a 75% black population as well. So why are these immigrants coming from diverse countries, black, white, and Asian, as you said, kicking everybody's ass? And the answer seems to be very specific things, like strong families with a father in the home. And this is an emphasis throughout the thread, by the way, that the best way to boost your income, the best way to have someone strong there to defend you against racism, and so on down the line, is to have your dad around. So there's a very traditional pathway to success that I would say in the Larry Bird v. Michael Jordan 90s, the majority of people of all backgrounds had identified and were ready to pursue. And it seems like right now, and we're in one of those kind of dog legs of confusion with the whole CRT versus the alt-right sort of dynamic. And I don't really think it's going to produce anything. It will fight with each other for a few years and move on.
That raises an important segue here. Where are you on this, though? You're dealing with woke students, I'm sure, all the time. Where are you on the CRT stuff?
Well, I think CRT is useless. I mean, one of the things that's done with a lot of this, again, coming from kind of the wonk background, is the attempt to spin it. This is another thing I said when I said, you know, IQ scores are real, they don't represent maximum potential, don't believe these goofy public officials, don't believe these academics that have a degree in something like fat studies that's not physics.
Right.
I mean, that's a journal, fat studies, Google it. I'm not exaggerating anything in this call. But I mean, so when you're talking about some of this stuff, the pitch for critical race theory is, oh, well, don't you want to talk honestly about slavery? And that got me the first time as a black man. But then you open these books like Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States or Moving Left from There, you know, the 1619 curriculum, and you realize this is all about slavery.
Right.
1619's core claim is that the USA was founded on slavery. And that's simply not true. I mean, at the time of the founding, perhaps 7% of the population was made up of slaves or indentured servants. Terrible has happened at that time. But the Constitution wasn't written by slaves. I mean, it's a unique focus on the one negative thing we did at this time, too, if you count the Indian Wars. That certainly deserves to be 15, 20% of the book. It shouldn't be all of it. That's an insane way to teach kids.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And I, you know, be very interesting to me what happens with this politically, because I think there is an undercurrent right now that Democrats don't feel coming on the culture war, whatever you want to call it. And I think parents are upset. Some of this is related to the pandemic and lockdowns and masks and all that. But I think that there are people that were exhausted by the previous president that don't agree with the current president, don't agree with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, that just couldn't support Trump for whatever reason, behavior or otherwise. And those people are still out there and they're going to vote next year in the midterms.
Yeah. Just one question, actually, to direct back at the host. Did you see the rainbow monkey, like, online?
No. What is that about?
I think this is a good example. For you and the listeners, Google rainbow monkey, England.
Doing it right now.
And you'll see this insanely shocking thing. It's a monkey with, like, exposed pink breasts and some other stuff. The point is that this monkey was used not as the mascot for an adult furry convention or something, but to teach kids reading in, I believe, the UK. This was like a library event. Hundreds of people attended. And as I understand, I could be wrong, the reason people became aware of this is that there's still some COVID protocols in place. You had Zoom cameras and so on in the building. And people saw this monkey, which was anatomically correct. It was like a 6'2" actor.
We're looking
at it right now.
Good
Lordy. It looks like someone who might have been in the Capitol on January 6th, just saying. But anyway.
Yeah, but that's really funny, actually. Yeah, people should definitely look into whether that guy was involved in the riot and, you know, either 1-6 or the left side, you know, last year. We saw some interesting looking people out there, suspicious seller. But I mean, the point is, though, that stuff like this has gone on for a fair amount of time in higher education. When you look at the Howard Zinn curriculum, when you look at things like pornography recognition and sex education that usually takes place in 9th or 10th grade, none of this, again, is exaggerated. And I think for the past couple of years, parents have been able to see it. And there's a pretty intensive backlash of what the hell. Like, a lot of people didn't like Trump's trash talking and his constant arguing. The Trump-Biden debate was just two guys shouting at each other. But I think if a lot of people had to pick that, like a kind of crass Nixon-style candidate or the naked rainbow monkey, they'd pick Nixon. So the Democrats, to some extent, are going to have to decide, like, are we going with Joe Biden and Colin Powell and these just mainstream politicians? Or are we going to continue with the rainbow monkey perspective? Like, to what extent is Ilhan Omar going to be the face of the party? You know, to what extent is the Human Rights Campaign going to be the face of the party? That's not a moral question. It's a strategic question.
Wilford Riley, I'm a fan. I was unfamiliar. Shame on me. I love the Twitter string. I've been looking at your background, and I love some of the other things that you've written about. So that's fantastic. And I also see if Wikipedia is accurate. Did you grow up in the Aurora, Illinois area?
Yeah, I went to East Aurora Senior, actually. My mom was an inner-city school teacher, so I was born on the south side of Chicago, and I grew up on the east side of Aurora. Like, nothing crazy, but, like, working-class schools where she taught. So, yeah, I was a student and athlete for Aurora East. A shout-out to the Tomcats.
Do you know Big Rock, Illinois?
Yeah, Hinkley Big Rock, actually. It's a school we had a meet and a basketball game against,
right,
as I recall.
The only work I ever did in my entire life was working on a farm for 2 summers. I was talking about this last week in Big Rock, Illinois. Back when Aurora, this was like 1977, 78, Aurora was nothing back then.
Well, yeah, there were some tough kids even in the 90s. I mean, we had two schools in like the surrounding two conferences that were basically still rural. One was Hinkley BR and one was DeKalb, where they invented barbed wire.
Yeah,
there were... There's some big farm kids, but it is a diverse environment. I mean, the Chicago outer suburbs at that time obviously went from that kind of rural belt into Aurora, which is a blue-collar Hispanic and Polish city mostly, and then into Naperville, the richest city in the Midwest. So it's a diversity. It's
absolutely
one of the world's big cities.
And you went to SIU, Carbondale or Edwardsville?
Carbondale.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Wilford. I loved the string. I'm going to highlight a little bit more here this afternoon. We'll have you back.
Sounds good. Love to come back.
Wilford Riley, Sue, and I don't know if you caught the entire string because we kind of, you know, went through them and zipped through them, but I just want to go through these because they're great. And it started with this. Look, there's all these things that are going on that we can't apparently talk about that most people, black, white, otherwise would agree with. For example, while police brutality is very bad, something like 90% of the majority of people shot by cops are violent repeat felons, usually struggling with the officer. It's actually higher than that. I think he was being kind on the 90%. This one I like. Males and females are different in obvious, easily measurable ways, some quite enjoyable, right? I mean, why can't we at least say, yeah, we're different, and that's not a bad thing. Dads matter. He touched on that. This is huge. And I'm someone who, you know, went through a divorce, unfortunately. But one of the biggest predictors of virtually every negative outcome in life, Wilford wrote, particularly for young girls and women, is not having present in-home married parents and a father. Many, mostly poor neighborhoods, will be food deserts until epidemic crime decreases. No one wants to build a shiny new store only to have it burnt down, and urban enterprise tracks the crime rate. Well, we know that here in St. Louis. Why don't people want to talk about that? The left-wing riots, which raged through all of 2020, were far larger in scope than 1/6. I mean, this is one of those uncomfortable things.
It is.
True.
That's why people don't talk about it.
I was outraged by what happened on January 6th, but the fact of the matter is, and I wasn't, there was a lot of criticism of whataboutism, all right? So in the moment, didn't want to play into whataboutism, but in retrospect, a lot worse, $2 trillion in damage. And again, outraged by what happened on January 6th, but you have the situation from George Floyd and even before that we saw in Ferguson, intentionally minimized by dishonest media that no one trusts, Wilford pointed out. A couple more points here. Many famous and universally praised people right now, I'd say especially on the left side of the fence, but I'm open to both arguments, are very stupid in the literal sense of not having a high IQ. You are not imagining this. I think it plays on both sides, personally. Number 9, while I'm on that point, IQ and similar scores are real, not meaningless, biased in the statistical sense. They don't measure max potential, but your grades and aptitude boards at the end of, say, college are actually a damn good predictor of how you'll do in life. Number 10, let's see, you might have a problem with this one. Okay, you ready?
What?
Get the buzzer. Dogs aren't children.
What? No, it's true. It's true.
Okay, but
you
I know what?
It.
I might say that.
Number
11, almost no one is actually oppressed in America. We talked about that. Number 12, and this is where he wrapped it up. He says, this has 1,200 likes, a lot more than that. I'll end it here in this stream, but in a blatant plug, you can read my take on white privilege, cultural appropriation, and the alt-right in his book, and maybe we should have him back because he did write this book that's on Amazon, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About, which came out last year, Wilford Riley. And I thought he was awesome. Great guest.
Yeah,
so
he was
awesome. I appreciate
that.
It's 525, 97.1 FM Talk. Okay, we have an update on USA Basketball after two losses, exhibition losses to Nigeria and Australia.
They are playing Argentina right now, up by at least 15 points first quarter.
I do have Greg Popovich, the USA coach, in his response to a media member who was questioning the fact that they were losing these exhibitions coming up here. We have audio cut of the day. You know, when Wilford was on a few minutes ago, Wilford Riley from down in Kentucky was talking about this situation. I was unfamiliar with the rainbow monkey. Dave, I showed you the picture. He honestly does kind
of
look like...
You can't get it out of your head once you see it.
He looks a little like a very colorful version of QAnon Shaman, right? But this was a reading event in England, in London, in a London library. So this is angry parents hit out at the actor clad in a multicolored outfit with fake genitalia. He's brought out because this is an event to encourage children to look at books over the holidays. And it shows the members of the Mandinga Arts Group at the Red Bridge Library's Summer Reading Challenge event at the Good Mays Library. Dave, three performers filmed outside the event, one dressed in a rainbow monkey costume with a thank penis and a bare bottom.
Wow. You've unfortunately come a long way since reading Rainbow, and not in a good way, necessarily.
School Governor Haas Ahmed states, apparently this is meant to encourage kids in Red Bridge to pick up reading for summer. Please tell me the rationale behind these indecent costumes were that it was shown to families. Wait, that were shown to families and done so publicly. Is this really necessary? No, I would say that it's not necessary.
No, right? I would vote for not.
Wow.
Nightmares looking at this thing.
It's horrifying.
And it's at this point where my next guest is horrified because he's like, this is my lead-in, talking about a guy in a monkey outfit with a fake penis. David Stokes is the director of municipal policy at the Show Me Institute. Sorry, David, I apologize for that. One never knows what the lead-in story is going to be to a guest segment.
Well, Mark, I'm just glad to say that when we took our kids to the University City Public Library for their sort of child youth reading engagement, that it was much cleaner than that. It was much more ordinary, thankfully.
That is good to hear. All right, so Governor Parson just signed a bill into law, and folks are going to know this because it finally puts Missouri into the online sales tax collection business, right? That's something that had been missing for a while.
Right. It now mandates it. And nobody knows exactly how much money is going to be raised because it should be very significant, don't get me wrong. But, you know, a lot of companies have been sort of doing this anyway in Missouri. So now it's just sort of mandating. And it's an idea whose time has definitely come. And it's a good thing that we're getting this in Missouri. And the legislature deserves credit and the governor deserves credit because I think the best thing about the bill is that it's not going to produce some windfall for state government especially, and that as they collect more online sales taxes going forward, there'll be some state income tax cuts to offset that increased revenue. So that's a very good way to go about it.
Well, basically, if you buy, well, I guess even today, I don't know if it's kicked in, if you buy things online and you have in the past from this state that you would not be charged the tax, the argument was always, well, look, you can go to the online retailer, get this tax free, and go to the, you know, the mom and pop store and have to pay taxes. It's a disadvantage to them. You know, I do think that not having that tax for a period of time was helpful to, you know, people getting online and doing the doing that type of shopping. But I guess it was, I liked it for a while, David, I'll just say that, but I understand the argument against it.
Oh, I did too. If you go back to things we were writing about it a decade or so ago or more, you didn't want to strangle new online businesses with this complicated tax system, reminding people that with all the special taxing districts we have in this state, it's even more complicated here in Missouri to do this online sales tax collection than elsewhere. But the time is definitely in these past few years, and especially with the COVID increase in people ordering to home, the time has come for this in Missouri. And it's a very good bill. But one of the nice parts about the bill is it's not just the Wayfair legislation. There's also a lot of good tax increment financing reform parts in it and other things. And that's why the post I wrote up at showmeinstitute.org that you referenced earlier, you know, we talk about there's more than just Wayfair in this bill. And often, Mark, as you know, when you get these bills where you just throw a whole bunch of stuff in it, usually that's a bad thing. And a lot of bad stuff gets snuck through at the last minute. But in this case, the more we look into the bill, the more we find the stuff in it, it gets pretty good. Good for taxpayers.
Yeah, so explain, the TIF situation gets a little into the weeds sometimes for people, even for me to understand because I'm not in government, but this is tax increment financing. And how does this bill, David, change the way that TIFs are used in Missouri?
Well, the biggest change, and there are several changes in the bill, and the blog post at showmeinstitute.org explains it in a little more detail. But the single biggest part is that it now makes as a general rule that there's no use of tax increment financing in the floodplains of the state. Now, there are lots of exceptions that in the bill, which were political necessities. Certain cities and counties got themselves exempted, but thankfully none of the cities and counties in our area exempted themselves. There's some additional exemptions for levy districts and port districts, which, you know, I don't necessarily think that should have been in there, but that was a political necessity.
So
but-
just before you move on that, the those would be based on what? If you're exempted, what are they claiming exemption for? What reason?
Well, now you can still use tax increment financing, which is probably the single most heavily used form of corporate welfare or tax subsidy in the state. You can still use it for certain projects in our floodplains. But what we've seen so much throughout the state in our area is the use of corporate welfare and tax subsidies through TIF to help develop the floodplain. And that's not a good thing. Mark, you're a sportsman and hunter. And there's a lot of reasons, whether fiscal responsibility, environmentalism, many, many more, to realize that taking tax dollars and subsidizing floodplain development with other people's money is really, generally speaking, a bad thing to do.
Well, is it a bad?
That's why it's
okay.
It's
let me work through this. So it's a bad thing to do because I think in a lot of people, I'm just going to use common sense here. No in-depth political analysis or, you know, analysis of this issue. But I think we all know, and for those of us who were around in 1993 and we saw what happened in the Chesterfield Valley and all this gets developed out there, probably going to be a time where there's floods out there again. Who knows when it's going to happen? Is that basically the point? Because we know this is a risky proposition. Why take more taxpayer money and put it into subsidizing development in floodplains? Does that account for it or not?
Yes. No, that's absolutely it. You're taking tax subsidies to develop land that probably shouldn't be developed. And if people want to do it on their own, with
Fine.
Their own money, well, maybe.
So be it, right?
Why
yeah.
are you taking tax dollars? If you take, why are you taking tax dollars to help people do it, which will inevitably require tax dollars in the end to go through in the emergency situation, whether it be, you know, rescue or rebuilding? You're just making our flooding problem worse. We have such a flooding issue here in Missouri. We saw in 2019 the floods were almost as bad as they were in 1993, and there was a lot less places for that water to go, because when you develop that floodplain, you know, you're not stopping the water, you're just moving the water. So you're going to be flooding somewhere else, someone else, and you're going to make it worse through your new, through paving over so much floodplain, through building additional levees. And so it's a good thing that finally, as our standard statute now is that no TIF in the floodplain. Again, there are exceptions, and that was a political necessity, but on the whole, it's still a big step forward.
But on TIFs overall, my guess is that the Show Me Institute, David Stokes is here, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute, wants to go further when it comes to reforming TIFs. Developers, though, have said for a long time, look, there are projects that get done with tax increment financing that just simply would not be accomplished without it.
And that's absolutely what they say. And in most cases, the economic studies of it show that it's really not true. And that you've got people do study this. People, independent economists, study this all over the country. And they find that the fact of the matter is the developers, look, if you're going to offer them a subsidy, they're going to say what they need to say to get the subsidy. They've got investors and loans. If you're offering them money, they're going to take it. But one of the reasons that tax subsidies and the whole local tax incentive game, be it TIF or many other different types of subsidies out there, one of the reasons it doesn't work, it doesn't succeed in actually growing an economy, is because, look, the government has no idea, no ability to predict the future, and that many of these projects and proposals are going to happen anyway. What we see in the St. Louis region is cities compete with each other for the subsidy because with so many cities and being so heavily fragmented, all these cities want to have the development in their city. You know, Maryland Heights has to have it in Maryland Heights. But as a region, we really shouldn't care where most of the development goes as long as it's in our region. And that's why these schemes don't really grow our economy. And whether you take local studies like the one done by East-West Gateway Council of Governments or the many, many national ones, that's the fundamental thing that they all find in the end.
So what would you do then moving forward with proposals in the legislature to go even further on TIFs?
That's a great question. And now we've been working on this floodplain TIF stuff for some time. And so what I'd like to see happen is more counties move to it, and this gets real specific, and I'll try not to bore everybody to death here. I'd like to see more counties move to a county-level TIF commission where the people making the decisions aren't aren't dominated by cities who are just out for themselves, but are sort of thinking a little more regionally, like we now have in St. Louis County and in St. Charles County and Jefferson County. And that's worked very well. We saw last year in St. Louis County, the County TIF Commission rejected a major $150 million floodplain TIF in Maryland Heights. And that was a wonderful decision by the St. Louis County TIF Commission. And we've seen a lot more fiscal discipline in general when the decisions are made by people at a higher level who have to think regionally and are answerable to all the voters, as opposed to just little city councils making the decision who only care about what happens in Shrewsbury or Chesterfield or Ellisville, to name some of the cities that have gone through these battles.
I'm guessing that you will study some of these issues moving forward, but one thing that comes to mind when it comes to TIFs is how many, you know, and I don't think we've felt the repercussions of this yet, but with commercial real estate, I don't want to say drying up, but there are some issues with commercial real estate. We know we see empty storefronts in certain areas. This goes beyond just retail, but there have to be some, you know, some effects of TIFs that won't end up being productive in the end, right? Because these are stores and businesses that will close down and you have to go into bankruptcy.
Absolutely. And it's going to be very interesting in these coming years to see how this goes into effect. The biggest example of that in Missouri was a Bass Pro out in Independence outside of Kansas City that got an enormous TIF. And the one thing with tax and grant financing is it's supposed to all be on the developer, not on the taxpayer, in theory. It works out it's on the taxpayer, of course. But in theory, they say it's the developer's money. But in reality, when it does fail, like it did at the Independence Bass Pro, the city of Independence had to step in and directly take current tax dollars to make up the bond payments. And that was terrible. And I fear that you're going to see more of that in the St. Louis right. area as well. Look, when you go out, as cities lure businesses from one city to another with TIF and all other types of subsidies, it's not hard to go out our major roads and see empty storefronts, which, look, if it happens because of market force, it's fine. But too often it happens because what you had in Bridgeton and St. Anne, where you had a Walmart on the border of both cities, and both cities sharing the tax revenue, and then one city decided to give them a subsidy to move entirely into Bridgeton. So, you know, there was nothing gained. There was still just one Walmart, but now you have one empty shell of a building in St. Anne, and Bridgeton is getting all the benefits there. It's just the incentives are all out of whack. And this is the nice thing about Senate Bill 153 is it moves in a solid direction to address it. But going forward, we definitely need a lot more to do.
What was your opinion, just quickly here, on tax issue? Because the governor also signed off on the gas tax, the first one in a long time. It's going to raise the gas tax 17 cents over a period of 5 years. And you can get a refund if you keep track of your receipts. I'm not sure people are going to do that. I guess a couple of people will. I supported that, David. What about you?
I supported it, too. You know, there's some questions as to whether there was some use of trying to get around the Hancock Amendment to sort of improperly get it and not require a vote. So I think that remains to be seen. Some people are investigating that. But assuming that there's no Hancock Amendment issues at play here, I do support the gas tax increase. Mark, we've discussed in the past, if it was up for me, I'd like to see a lot more toll roads in Missouri, highways and bridges.
What?
Well, because it's a user tax. It's a user tax, and you then have choice whether or not you want to go on
that road. It's a pain
on
a road trip, people.
Well, it's not anymore, though. You can have – they just basically automatically bill you. Here's a hint for you, Sue. I got one for you.
Fast pass.
If you put – no. Put a bike rack on the back of your car. Don't have a front license plate because when you go through, they can't pick up your license plate. Mark. I'm not saying I've ever done that.
No, of course not.
But it works. That's... David Stokes, great to have you on. I appreciate it.
I'm going to remember that trick, Mark. That's a great idea.
It works really well. I cut my friend John Ziegler off last week. We brought him on, Dave, to talk about some of the changes in college athletics with paying kids. And I got off on some tangent. I don't even remember what happened.
Yeah,
what?
And then I know that Sue's shocked by that.
Surprising.
Right? Well, and then at the end of the segment, I'm like, John, we don't have any time to talk about what we brought you. And he had promoted it on Twitter and everything. So we're going to have him back on. Plus, he's got a lot to say about what's going on in California just overall. He always does. George Gray will be here in the studio on Thursday. He is the voice of The Price is Right. He's a St. Louis native, big Cardinals fan, and we're going to do The Price is Wrong. Dave, it's your first experience.
I'm excited.
It's fun. It is a lot of fun. George gets into it. He loves it. And then the roundtable is set for Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. Jane Duker, Jeff Smith, and Gene Evans will all be here in the studio. This is a very complicated segment with several audio bites, so let's get started.
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
This is so embarrassing. These are Democrat lawmakers in Texas that fled the state because they don't want to vote on voting reform, and they're singing We Shall Overcome like they're a bunch of oppressed people.
Oh, my goodness.
I do believe.
Wow.
I hope that Republicans, certainly in Texas, they'll you know, keep that audio. But honestly, and I said this with Josh Krasauer earlier, you take politics out of the equation. You just put a normal person in front of this story and say, you have people fleeing the state because they don't want to do their jobs. This is Greg Abbott, the governor.
Isn't that the most un-Texan thing you've ever heard? Texans running from a fight? They're quitters. It's like during a football game or a baseball game, taking their equipment when they're way behind and just leaving the field. That is not the way that Texans do things. And you captured it perfectly, and that is they're leaving and abandoning their right to vote. And I tell you what is crazy. But, Laura, this is not over. Because, as was pointed out in that prelude, we have special sessions that last 30 days. And the governor calls them, and I will continue calling special session after special session because overtime is going to continue until they step up to vote.
Yeah, good for him, and I hope they do arrest their asses because that's the possibility. And the thing about this is, not unlike Georgia, the Democrats and the media completely representing everything that's going on down there.
The thesis that they are operating under is completely false because what the Texas law does doesn't hinder anybody's ability to vote. In fact, interestingly, what Texas is seeking to do is to add additional hours to vote. Texas has 12 days of early voting, and the hours of which will be expanded. And we will ensure that hours are expanded on Election Day also. So their entire thesis is completely wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong, but that doesn't stop people like Jasmine Crockett from saying things along these lines.
Me, it's going to be more so of an ask for him to push as hard as he can. This filibuster has to, we have to do away with it. Because, once again, it's Republicans being allowed to be obstructionists.
Hypocrisy. They're using a filibuster to flee the state of Texas to plead with the president to do away with the filibuster in Washington, D.C. That is the example of hypocrisy on its face. And that's one reason why they're losing the arguments with regard to voting on this issue and other issues in the state of Texas.
I love this issue. I can't wait to see some handcuffs on those Texas state lawmakers. This one's going to be fun to watch.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.